Sasaram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I am Team Ready Sai's Bishu. So happy to be with you to continue our journey of diving deep into this eternal bliss that is the Vahini series. In the previous episode, we finished 108 sessions of discussing the Prema Vahini. And today we move on to turn a new leaf in our saga of understanding Bhagwan's message, which have come directly from Him. The Almighty Lord, in every incarnation, came down to the level of man, lived with man, ate with man, played with man, and at the same time preached, purified and awakened in man the power of His own inner strength. And the Lord, in the Satyuga, gave us the Vedas, in the Treta Yuga, in the Dwapara Yuga, in every age, if you see, Bhagwan always spoke, He always gave sermons. But only in this incarnation, as Sri Satya Sai, out of His immense compassion for mankind, Bhagwan decided to do something He had never done before. He took the pen Himself. The mind-uplifting message of the Master came now in an enthralling flow directly from the Source. So its purity and its content can be preserved in its pristine form for posterity. And Swami chose as His vehicle to carry this message to the masses, the ashram mouthpiece, Sanatana Sarathi. This holy magazine carried the priceless streams of Vahinis that Bhagwan wrote for an astonishing 318 months spread over more than 2.5 decades. Starting from February 1958, when He inaugurated this holy magazine, Swami continuously penned, however tight be His schedule, an article every month, which was either an exposition of divine love, an explanation of deep philosophical thought, an enlightening dialogue between a seeker and the master, or narration of entertaining yet elevating divine sport relating to His earlier manifestations, incarnations. And all these streams of divine grace and illumination that Bhagwan wrote till October 1984 for Sanatana Sarathi were compiled into volumes, and that is how you have Prema Vahini, Dharma Vahini, Bhagavata Vahini, and so on. In fact, in His very first public discourse on the occasion of Dasara, Vijayadashami, in 1953, when Bhagwan was only 27, Swami said, "The first 16 years of this life have been, as I have often told you, the period when Bala Leela, the divine child sport, predominated. And the next 16 years is being spent mostly in Mahimas, in miracles, in order to give you joy." Joy and contentment are short-lived sensations, Swami said. You have to catch that mood and make it a permanent position. You have to convert it into bliss. And then Bhagwan said, after the 32nd year, you will see me active more and more in the task of upadesha, spiritual instruction, teaching the erring humanity and in directing the world along the path of truth, righteousness, peace and love. And then Bhagwan added, not that I am determined to exclude Leela and Mahima from my activity after that. I only mean that re-establishing Dharma, correcting the crookedness of the human mind and guiding humanity back to Sanatana Dharma will be my task hereafter. This is what Swami revealed when He was 27. And significantly enough, in His 32nd year, Bhagwan unfurled this unique conduit of His mission and message on a no less significant day than the occasion of Mahashivaratri. So it was on February 16th, 1958, when Bhagwan blessed the first few copies of this newest manifestation of his will to be distributed freely to everyone, Sanatana Sarathi now was in the hands of the blessed devotees. And in the inaugural issue of this magazine on Shivratri 1958, Swami said, "From this day, our Sanatana Sarathi is on the march at the head of the spiritual cohorts, the Vedas, Upanishads and scriptures, to subdue the evil ego brood which consists of injustice, anarchy, falsehood. May this charioteer fight for world prosperity, and by making the drum of victory sound and resound, spread joy among all mankind." This is what Swami wrote in the very first issue of Sanatana Sarathi. And just like a mother would sacrifice everything and go to any extent to take care of her just born infant, Swami too embarked on an exercise that was hitherto unprecedented by any standards in any age. And as I mentioned before, the Lord decided to take the pen himself. And this was perhaps the greatest demonstration of Swami's immeasurable love and immense concern for all of us. It was epoch-making. Imagine God himself writing week after week. Imagine if he had the Bhagavad Gita written by Lord Krishna himself and not by a third party. Imagine if Lord Rama had written in his own handwriting his story. For the first time, the avatar acceded to document his message himself. Perhaps this is the best way the purity of his preaching could be preserved and the destiny of mankind could be rewritten to save it from impending peril in the Kali Age. Sanatana means eternal, the timeless one. Sarathi means charioteer. Professor Kasturi, the first editor of Sanatana Sarathi, explains in his biography, Loving God, "Recognize God as the Sarathi, the charioteer of your life. Yield wholeheartedly to His direction. Then you will reach your destination in good shape." And in reality, Sanatana Sarathi is not just a name. It is an announcement, it's a divine proclamation, it's a reaffirmation that Bhagwan is the omni-will who is molding and manipulating. He is the one who is directing and demonstrating since time began the wills of living beings from amoeba to an astronaut. Everybody is just a play of His will. It is a clarion call to clean our hearts and souls and create an ambience for Him to install in us so that He will lead us to truth, goodness, joy and bliss. In fact, there are so many instances when God has converted a stormy tornado of someone's life into a serene sea. And that happened when they allowed Him, they allowed the divine to take over the reins of their lives. In fact, I remember the story of Dr. Y.S. Tathachari, a dedicated biophysicist who had worked for many years at the MIT in the US and after that at Stanford University and in the University of California. In 1960, he suffered a very serious illness, aggressively malignant and metastasizing tumors in the skull, in the neck, in the ribs, in the hips. It was almost like death sentence was already given to him. It was just a matter of time. And the doctor told him, "Sir, miracles do happen, so we just hope that something of that sort will happen to you. Otherwise, there's nothing that medical science can do." This was 1962. This couple came to Chennai, and the doctors in India said, "Now even the liver is affected with cancer." And he says, "I felt like seeking the blessings of Bhagwan." Someone told him, "Why don't you go? There is Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba who might be able to help you." Swami blessed him and his wife, and Swami told Dr. Tathachari to go back to Stanford and continue the medication. When Tathachari, after a few years, came back to Swami again, Swami said, no need to take any more medications, no need to take any more dietary supplements. Swami said, you are cured. And that assurance of Bhagwan, that blessing of Bhagwan was so powerful that from that day, Bhagwan became the charioteer of his life. He lived for many years after that. That miracle had happened. He continued to go back to America and worked with undiminished zeal. In fact, Bhagwan wrote him a very beautiful letter many years later. He said, busy yourself with the duties that are entrusted to you in good spirit and in fine health. Sai is ever by your side. He is the charioteer of the vehicle of your life. The ship of your life, however heavily loaded with the cargo of joys and sorrows, can certainly arrive at the harbor of self-realization if it is propelled by holy energy. Continue the journey in confidence. Sai is always guiding you from harm and pain. Swami is constantly showering his compassion on you. He counsels you from within and he corrects you on your part. Be immersed in the duties entrusted to you. Remember, that is Swami's work. When you discharge your duties, be convinced that that work is my work. Then health and happiness will be added onto you. This is what happens when we make God the charioteer of our lives, and that is what Sanatana Sarathi means, and that is what Swami wanted us to inculcate as we read these vainis. That's why in the Sanatana Sarathi, the vainis came one after another. The very first series in the inaugural issue of Sanatana Sarathi, as we know, was the Prema Vaini. For 25 months till February 1960, Swami assiduously penned for mankind the norms and nuances of sadhana through Prema Vaini. And as I mentioned, we discussed this book through our 108 episodes in this program, Vaini Satsang. In fact, just after 3 months of starting Prema Vaini, Bhagwan, in May 1958, started another series, Sandeha Nivarini, Clearance of Divine Doubts. So, Swami, in this series of articles, which he started writing parallelly, even as he was writing Prema Vaini, here, Swami took a different approach. He played a dual role. He took the role of an inquisitive devotee as well as the role of an enlightening guru. Perhaps Swami thought, people have so many doubts. Maybe I should put out their doubts and clarify them so that this will help them to get a better understanding of the message. And so, till the birthday issue in November 1959, both these treaties of spiritual wisdom, one fertilizing the devotee's hearts with sadhana, with pure love, and other weeding out any unruly twig or shoot of any hesitation or fear, any doubt, was preferred to the devotees by Bhagwan concurrently. So for 19 months, Swami wrote Sandeha Nivarini. And after Sandeha Nivarini came Dharma Vaini, Upanishad Vaini, in that order, Prashanti Vaini, Dhyana Vaini, Jnana Vaini, Ramakatha Rasa Vaini, Satya Sai Vaini, Vidya Vaini, Sutra Vaini, Leela Kaivalya Vaini. Leela Kaivalya Vaini was the last Vaini that Bhagwan wrote. 25 years, 15 series of spiritual volumes, and 312 months of continuous documenting of his message. Everything, every question that we have on the spiritual path, we just have to open these books and they will speak to us as clear as Bhagwan standing right in front of us and telling us. So after Premavahini, by Bhagwan's grace, we will move on with Sandeha Nivarini. But before we move on to that, let me play for you that beautiful bhajan, which so melodiously sings the glories of all these vahinis that Bhagwan has blessed us with. So this is the beautiful Vahini Bhajan. And you know, there is one phrase in the last line of this Bhajan, Chira Sukha Daini. Chira Sukha Daini means the one who gives us permanent happiness. And so beautifully it is there in this Bhajan that if you follow these Vahinis, you will be blessed with permanent happiness. You will be blessed with a happiness that is lasting. That will be there always with you. You will always smile. That is what these vahinis can do to you. That is what these vahinis can bring into your lives. So with that joy, let's move on. And in the previous discussion that we had on Premavahini, Brother Sai Prakash was with me as the co-host of this program. But going forward, we wanted to make this satsang really more participative. So instead of just one more brother joining with me in the Radio Sai studio, brother working with me as part of the Radio Sai team, which will also happen off and on, we will have so many brothers from the Radio Sai team joining us. But going forward for Sandeha Nivarini, what we have thought is, we really want to open this up to you, dear brothers and sisters. Let us do it together. Let it be an e-satsang, enlightening satsang, using the power of the electronic media, using the power of technology. Let us join in. Wherever you are most welcome to participate in this satsang. You may be a Sai youth in Australia, you may be a Sai youth in Boston, you may be a Sai devotee in Fiji, you may be a Sai enthusiast in Canada, You may be in Chennai, you may be in Delhi, you may be in UAE, wherever you are, you can join in and be part of the Vahini Satsang. And that is the reason why we want to ensure that this really becomes not just a satsang between 2-3 brothers in Radio Sai, but a satsang which is global. All join in, share their reflections, share their insights, and become more enthused to walk on this path laid down by Bhagwan. So to get started, I requested Brother Venkat Reddy, a Sai youth in Australia, to share what he felt about Sandeha Nivarini. And very interestingly, he came up with a very, I would say, a very lovely and lively anecdote about his connection with Sandeha Nivarini. To me, it was quite a revelation and quite a heartening experience listening to what brother had shared about his tryst with Sandeha Nivarini. So let's listen to Brother Venkat Reddy.
Actually, thinking about Sandeha Nivarini, my mind goes back to London Heathrow Airport about 9 years ago. I had just landed in England. I knew nobody, not a soul. Even my employer that I had come to work for, I'd only known through emails and through phone. Never actually met him. So here I was with one suitcase or one backpack, 23 kilos, one piece of hand luggage, 7 kilos, and nothing else. Come to a strange country, knowing nobody. And in that immigration queue, which was absolutely huge, it was long, it was winding its way like a huge snake. It was a serpentine queue of people. I pulled out Sandeha Nivarini from my 7 kilo backpack. And I began reading it. I thought, this will help pass the time. I could not put it down. I kept reading it. And I took a bus from London Heathrow to the city where I was supposed to work. I just read it all the way from start to finish. And that book and those words of Swami gave me a lot of self-belief and a lot of self-confidence and helped grow my faith in him through the various experiences that he gave me and my wife, who came a little while later to join me. So it's very, very poetic. It's poetic that I should be even thinking about Sandeha Nivarini, an offering of Swami to us that gave me a lot of self-belief and a lot of and some faith in him so many years ago.
So that is what Sandeha Nivarini did to Brother Venkat Reddy. In a strange land, strange circumstances, Sandeha Nivarini gives him company and he connects to Sai, he connects to Swami, finds support, finds help, finds confidence. So on that note, let's begin our discussion on Sandeha Nivarini. And like we had done in the previous episodes where we retranslated the English of Prema Vahini from the original of Swami's handwritten Prema Vahini in Telugu, we did the same for Sandeha Nivarini. So I'm going to now play for you one segment, one little part from chapter 1 of Sandeha Nivarini, wherein we have retranslated from the original Telugu of Bhagwan. And we have two brothers from Radio Sai reading that out. As you know, Sandeha Nivarini is in the form of a dialogue. So you have the bhakta, you have the devotee, and you have Bhagwan. The devotee is asking the questions and Bhagwan is answering. And it is Bhagwan who has written. He knows what is there in the minds of the devotees. Swami has written it like a conversation. So we have here two voices who have recorded this for us, just so that we can listen to what Bhagwan had written before we go on to our discussion.
Swami, can we ask you freely about any topic concerning the spiritual path which we do not know?
Certainly. What is the objection? Why this doubt? What am I here for? is it not for explaining to you things you do not know? You can ask me without any fear or hesitation. I am always ready to answer. Only, I want earnest inquiry with a desire to know.
But some elders say it is wrong to ask the Guru frivolous questions. Are they right, Swami?
That is not correct. Whom else can the disciple approach? Since the Guru is everything to him, it is best that he consults him in all matters and then acts.
Some say that we should reverentially carry out whatever the elders ask us to do without raising any objections. What is your opinion on this?
Until you develop full faith in them and know that their words are valid, it will be difficult for you to carry out their orders reverentially. So, until then, it won't be wrong to ask them the essence of their instructions so that you may be convinced.
Swami, whom are we to believe? Whom are we to discard? The world is full of deceit. When those whom we believed are good themselves turn out to be bad, how can faith grow?
Well, my boy, where is the need for you to place faith in others? Whether in this world or the next, believe in yourself first. When you have complete faith in these two, that is not placing faith in others and having complete faith in yourself, there is no need for the very thought of good and bad to come to you.
Swami, at times faith in the Lord also diminishes. What is the reason for this?
Faith in the Lord diminishes when one's desires for success in external pursuits is not fulfilled. Once you relinquish those desires and aspire only for atmic connection, you will not be put to hurts and insults. It is primary to have firm faith in the Lord. Without that, you will be plagued with doubts for every little thing.
So that is the first segment of Sandeha Nivarini. I see in this segment three central ideas. One, Bhagwan is very clearly saying that feel free to ask the Guru questions, because until you are convinced of the essence of the Guru's instructions, you will not be able to carry them out reverentially. And then Bhagwan goes on to the second central idea of believing in yourself. And the third central idea is faith, the predominant, paramount importance of faith. So we'll take the first idea. Feel free to ask questions. Get all the cobwebs of doubts removed from your mind. I had the chance to talk to Brother Y. Arvind. Brother Y. Arvind is an alumnus of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, who later on had the chance to work in Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences in Whitefield as well as in Puttaparthi in Prashanthi Gram for many years. Someone who has had the chance to bask in the physical proximity of Bhagwan on many occasions, an excellent speaker and a writer, dramatist, actor. So Brother Y. Arvind shared about how on one occasion he had this opportunity to ask questions freely to Swami. Let's listen to him.
A beautiful conversation we were having. Bhagwan was speaking about Karnam Subbamma Garu and Kasturi Garu and all those wonderful devotees. He was using the words bhakti and prapti equally. I was fortunate enough to be a part of that. You know, bunch of boys were seated with Bhagwan at his lotus feet and Bhagwan was saying this. And then I said, Swami, a small request. He said, yeah, come on. Swami, are you saying bhakti and prapti? Right? I am sitting at your lotus feet right now. All of us are at your lotus feet now. Swami, is this bhakti or is this prapti? Swami, you know, like, he just leans back into his interview room chair, gives that appraising look, eyebrows raised, smile, and then he says, prapti undi bhakti penchuko, you have prapti. What is prapti? Merit. Millions of births and tapas, you know, the penance that we have done, you have merit. But improve your devotion, bhakti penchuko.
Because of the merit, you are there now, but for bhakti, you have to work now.
Exactly. And next question I ask, Swami, how do I increase bhakti? Bhakti etla pinchukunedi. You know, Bhagwan, the expression of the smiling mother, loving mother, suddenly he becomes a chastising father. And he says, you cannot grow bhakti. Bhakti is not one small baby which you can grow. It is not a plant that you can put in a pot and water and it will grow. I was surprised because Swami always talks about bhakti, the seed, the plant, the nurturing is sadhana, the seed is our intention. You know, I was a bit surprised and Swami said, idanta a bhagavantudu anugrahame. Everything is the grace of the Lord. I looked at him and said, yes, to have devotion to me also is my grace to you. Then I said, Swami, I want to ask another question. Why did it take me so long to come to your lotus feet? If you are saying I have prapti, if you are saying that it is your anugraham and your grace that is doing everything, why did it take so long for me to come to you? Then Swami said, okka chinna katha. Then I'll tell you a small story. I said, yes, Swami. There was a stone cutter in a village, far away from the village, and his wife had taken up a vow to do Aditya Puja, worship of the Lord Surya. And for that, she needed to have the first darshan of the Lord in the morning. Unfortunately, there was a stone in the way. The stone cutter worked very hard for 15 days, 20 days, started beating the rock, hammering the rock. The rock was almost, it went through a lot of damage. And then the 21st day, his son comes and hits the stone breaks. Swami pauses and asks all of us. We are all, you know, literally engrossed. And Swami says, why did the stone break? Was it the 21st blow or was it the 20 plus first blow? The answer was obvious. Swami, it is the 20 plus 1. 20 years of hard work plus one blow, that's why it broke. Then Swami said, this is also like that. Unless you know darkness, you will not know the value of light. So the time that you think that you have spent away from me is your experience of the material world. The moment you come to me and you realize that that is nothing and this is everything, your evolution will go to the next level. It will become exponential. So I feel my experience says that every experience in your life before you came to the divine, came to the lotus feet was also part of his decision.
So that was one direct interaction with Swami where Brother Arvind had the chance to ask questions. So everything that is happening, if we have devotion to Swami also, it is his grace, it is his will. And that is the reason why we have to be all the time so grateful. Earlier I have narrated instances where Swami told a devotee that if you don't correct yourself, I will ensure that you cannot even think of me. The very fact that we are listening to this, very fact that we know him, very fact we are able to think of him, everything is his grace. So if we have to understand what Bhagwan has written in Sandhya Nivarini or Premavani, that also we need his grace. So I think that whole process of having an attitude of gratitude is so important. This is just an instance to share with you how when you ask freely to the divine, that's when clarity emerges. And that's what Swami is telling here. Ask freely, don't hesitate to ask. And then the second important thing that Bhagwan mentions in this segment of Sandhya Nivarini is have faith in yourself first. Believe yourself. Now there are so many levels of this concept of self-belief. Let's get started with what Brother Venkat Reddy shared with me.
And Swami says, believe in yourself first. But where does this come from? So I was thinking about this, about myself, reflecting back over my life. And my mind went to my mother, who used to say to me when I was small, you can do it, you can do it. Have a go, just try. She used to say these sort of things to me. And when I was very small, 3 or 4 years of age, she put me on stage. She was a teacher in a school, and whenever her students did any drama, any dance, any sort of production, she would put me there amongst them, these much older students, and there was this little 3 or 4 year old playing the role of little Krishna or Ganesha or something like that. She would find me a little role and put me there on stage and say to me, you can do it. It's okay. And I think that's a very valuable thing that she gave me, this feeling that, yes, I can do it. That was so many years ago, decades ago, and here I am talking to you on Radio Sai. So a little bit of self-belief instilled by someone close to you whom you trust implicitly can go a long, long way. We just don't know how far that ego can fly. I would never have thought in my wildest dreams that I'd be speaking to people on Radio Sai. It's an amazing thing for me. And maybe it all began with my mom saying, you can do it, so many years ago. When I was leaving Fiji, that's where I grew up, to come to Australia, my mother said to me, look, I won't be with you when you go to school in Australia. I was 12 years of age when I left the country. She gave me a murti of Saraswati Ma, and she said, Saraswati Ma will be with you all the time. Think of her as your mother. And that was, I guess, the second step or the next major step in my journey with faith or belief, which was developing faith in God, in Saraswati Ma, that she will be always with me. Now, the poetic thing here, the interesting thing, the twist of fate, is that my mother is no longer with me now, and she has left her body, but Saraswati Ma, true to my mother's words, is still with me. And, of course, Sai Ma is always with me. Made me also think how important a role those who are close to us play in developing our self-belief. Swami says we should have self-belief, but where do we get it from? I think a large part of it does come from people who are close to us, who constantly remind us. It's not a one-off. They're constantly reminding us, yes, you can do it. Yes, you have the ability. Come on, you can do this. Have belief in yourself. No matter what other people are doing, you can do this. Makes me realize how important the environment we have. Although Swami says it's a changing environment, and we know this. It's jagat, jagat, comes and goes. People change. Places change. But we should use that environment, whatever environment we find ourselves in, to increase our self-confidence, to improve our self-belief. And maybe we should be part of that environment for other people to increase their self-belief, their self-confidence. What a beautiful service that would be for others if the self-confidence or self-belief that's been given to us by our parents, by our loved ones, by the Swami within us, if we can share that, we can imbue others with that feeling. How beautiful would that be? What an amazing place the world would be to be surrounded with people who had this kind of positivity and who shared this positivity with other people as much as we can.
So the self-belief for Venkat came from his mother. And I think, as you mentioned, there are a lot of people around us who try to instill that into us. And that's why Swami says good company is so important. We always are a prisoner of the limitations of our own minds. And all those people who have come out of the prison of their limited thinking have always gone on and done things which are absolutely breathtaking. Other day I was listening to a talk wherein a very successful public speaker said that he grew up in a very ordinary household. The father worked as a clerk, the mother was a housewife, and he thought all he had to do, perhaps even when he grows up, just take a decent job and just make his ends meet and lead just that normal life, until one day when he heard on the radio someone saying, an inspirational speaker saying, that if you give one extra hour every day to something that you think you want to become a little better in, just give one extra hour every day in an area of your liking. If you do that continuously for 5 years, you will become a national expert in that field. And this hit him so hard, he felt, why can't I do this? And so he started spending an extra hour, and he felt, oh, maybe I should spend more because I didn't do it for so many years. So he thought, I need to compensate for my lack of intensity for all these years. And just 3-4 years down the line, he became a very popular speaker. And in fact, very interestingly, the speaker whom he heard on the radio started using content that this person had produced for his shows. You will become a national expert if you just give one extra hour every day into your area of choice. Simple things, we have to believe in ourselves. We have to believe that we can do it. They said we have to move from a fixed mindset to a growing growth mindset. Many times we think we cannot. In the Bhagavad Gita is mentioned that among the senses I am the mind. Krishna says I am the mind among the senses because the mind is so powerful. Just that the mind has to be channelized. The mind should know where to derive its strength from. If the mind can tap that infinite source, you see people doing such amazing things. People going to the space, people, the other day I saw this video of this, someone diving into the ocean floor and she's there for minutes together and she's doing a marathon in the ocean floor and then she comes up. It is humanly absolutely impossible to do what she has done. But she did it because she didn't think that I am this body. She just thought that if I decide to do, I can just grow out of the limitations of this body. She believed in the power of the mind tapping into an inexhaustible energy that's locked in us. We have to move from that fixed mindset to the growth mindset, and that is what self-belief at one level is all about. But the self-belief has something much more. We can go much deeper into this concept. Let me take you back once again to Brother Y. Arvind.
The fundamental difference we have to understand is knowing is different from believing. You know your name is Bishu. You know that you're carrying your father's name. I know that I'm Arvind. I know that I'm carrying my father's name. But do I believe that I am Arvind? Do I believe that I'm carrying my father's name? See, the moment we enter into a spiritual path, every word's meaning reaches a totally different level. So when Swami says believe in yourself, Swami is not saying know yourself. Swami is saying believe in yourself. The capital S-E-L-F here. And how do we get that? If I simply put it in the way Bhagavan used to teach us when we were students. You remember that big construction of that house? Self-confidence.
Yes.
To self-realization.
Yes.
When Swami says believe in yourself, here, I personally feel my Lord is telling me, my son, have that self-confidence that everything that you are doing is being done by me through you. You don't need an external benchmark. You don't need to depend on somebody else. In one public discourse, Bhagwan mentioned, love everyone, but trust only God. How will you have belief in God? Only when we begin to realize that everything that happens is part of His will. I know, it's very easy for me to say it. But having gone through so much in my life, thanks to Swami, really thanks to Bhagwan for His polishing and mentoring and the continuous reinforcement of, don't worry beta, you are the zero, I am the one, I am the one working through you, Arvind. You are an instrument in my hand. The continuous reinforcement Bhagavan has given, and He has constantly kept our eyes open to that. We begin to understand that to be conscious of Him working through us is the meaning of believing in ourselves, our S-E-L-F.
So, as you mentioned, brother, believe in yourself, here we referring to the capital S. So wherein you actually don't refer to yourself as the body. you don't refer to yourself as the mind, you actually refer to yourself as that eternal self which is there everywhere. You're only a spark of that eternal self. So that S here is a spark of that super self. Brother, can you share from your own life's experience how good and bad will cease to affect you once you start believing in yourself?
In vernacular Telugu, there is one statement, Anta Manamanchike, which Swami has said in a public discourse, everything that happens in your life is for your good. Then Swami expanded on that. He said, Manchi jarigina mee manchike. If good happens, it is for your good. Chedu jarigina mee manchike. If bad things happen, that is also for your good. Then the next sentence, the punchline which Swami said, Manchi chedulu meeku matrame. Good and bad are for you. But the Lord, Devudu eppudu meeku manche chestadu. God will always do good for you. Good and bad are our perspectives, not in God's perspective. So when we look here, once you have faith, neither the good nor the bad will affect you. Having seen the bad, within inverted commas, if you really want to get candid about it in black and white, we cannot say it is bad, but materialism is not the right thing. If somebody wants to evolve, one has to really curb one's material wants. As Swami says, less luggage, more comfort. But you cannot live without that because you are in the material world. You need a little of that, but more of this. So when you begin to understand how to balance both, neither that nor this will affect you. The good and bad exists only in the material world. It doesn't exist in the spiritual realm. Because once you transcend the level of materialism, you will begin to look at things from a different perspective.
Because you'll accept everything.
Absolutely. The first step on the path of ascendance is called acceptance with joy. Everything that happens in your life is for your good. Unless we are able to reach that level. I've been through that, Pisho. Every one of us has been through that. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to share. If somebody else were seated in my chair, I'm sure they will also tell you an instance wherein, yes, the moment I accepted and let go, he took over. And that is when I realized faith in him will make everything same. There is no good, there is no bad.
Wow. In fact, as you were mentioning about how when we look at from one dimension, that is when we become confused. Here Bhagavan says that people lose faith because they get deluded by mere external world. And Swami says the reason why faith diminishes is sometimes if something does not work out in the external world, a particular desire of yours does not find fulfillment, you always have worked hard for a particular ambition in life and that does not see the light of the day, and then you feel, what is the purpose of praying to the Lord? I have done so much and nothing happens. So here Swami very beautifully says that desire only for a spiritual relationship.
Absolutely.
Then you won't become the target of doubts and difficulties.
Because it is not limited to a reality which is of your own definition. As Bhagavan said in that discourse, right? I already said that in my earlier line. Probably it was like Swami was literally pushing the words through me. But as I said, the moment you begin to compare with others, you become vain or bitter. So you have to let go of that. Once you come to spiritual realm, manchi jarigina, whatever good happens is for your good. Whatever bad happens is also for your good. Good and bad is our definition of reality, not his definition of reality. Therefore, in spirituality, as Bhagavan has beautifully put, once you begin to develop that love affair with God, which is a spiritual relationship, the ephemeral part of good and bad will fall aside. You will begin to look at everything from a different perspective. And then, desires will automatically fall by the wayside. For example, if I want to travel back from Puttaparthi to my place of work, my physical comfort would desire that I need to have, either I need to go by a plane, which is very comfortable, and even in a plane, if it's business class, executive class, coach, depending upon that, okay, I didn't get a flight, I have to go by train, And in train, I need an AC first class or an AC two tire, an AC three tire, then sleeper. Physical comfort would demand, or the desire, the word desire here, the physical desire would be a greater degree of comfort, a greater degree of comfort. But then what actually happens is meant for us to happen at that time. You are where you are because God wants you there. If I don't get a flight ticket and I have to go by train, it was for my good. Perhaps something was supposed to go wrong with that flight. Who knows? I was supposed to travel in AC. I wanted to travel in AC 2 tire, but I got only sleeper. Maybe it is for my good. Something may have supposed to have gone wrong there, and God has protected me. I have seen that happening in my life. Let me be honest with you. The reason I am able to speak all this to you so confidently, I am not theorizing over here. This is not theory at all. This is practical in my life. I have seen it happening in my own eyes. You are where you are because God wants you there. So we are blessed to have this opportunity to be with Swami, to understand and have this spiritual relationship.
Brother, since you mentioned about your own life's experience of having gone through this, maybe if you don't mind, can you share one instance?
Absolutely. I've already shared this several times in the past. I'll share it with you once again over here. The desire to be perfect, the desire to be known as something, how much it can affect your spiritual progress. When I joined Whitefield Hospital in the year 2001, I was working as a perfusionist. By Swami's grace, we had training in All India Institute. We were started working. And over a period of time, I became proficient in doing complex, it's called CABG, we call it CABG, that is bypass surgeries. It's a procedure wherein you do open heart surgery. And I became proficient in a particular type of surgery called coronary artery bypass graft. On one fine occasion, one of the doctors comes and pats me on the shoulder and says, "Arvind, you're coronary king." There you go, the horns begin to grow, you know. And though you don't want them to grow, at your weakest moment when it hits, man, it happens. And to be honest with you, probably that was definitely the way in which Swami wanted to teach me a lesson for life. That word remained somewhere at the back of my consciousness. Over a period of time, I became accustomed to thinking that, yes, every case that I do is going to be a success. In fact, it was spiritual ego. Swami is there. Swami is taking care. You know, the kind of justification that we give ourselves. I am so good because Swami wants.
And we say it just for the sake of saying it after some time.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. That's the way it is. So, it came to such an extent that Swami said, okay, now this little boy needs to be put in place. It so happened, case came into the theaters, checked out the case sheet, non-smoker, non-alcoholic, vegetarian, 45 years male, I think it was 45 years male, I may be wrong. Everything was straightforward, only 3 grafts. I was speaking to the surgeon said, "Arvind, straight, open and shut case, we'll be out in 2 hours. I said, "Definitely, sir." Jai ho, we started. You know, as you said, over a period of time, prayer should not become mechanical. Now, we were having a conversation before the recording, so I'm just sharing that with you. So, prayer should not become mechanical. I always start my case with the Gayatri Mantra. Chanted the Gayatri Mantra, started the case. Everything was smooth, hunky-dory, till we went on clamp. There's a step in the whole process. We went on clamp. Everything that could go wrong in the textbook started going wrong.
Oh my God.
Every single thing that could go wrong was going wrong. Coronary king, huh? You think you're coronary king, beta? I'll show you what you really are and what I'm capable of. So Swami was teaching me a very, very, very harsh and real lesson.
And in a case where you thought nothing can actually go wrong.
Exactly. The surgeon was going ballistic. The anesthetist was really upset. The scrub nurse was really, really burning me up. Because when the surgeon is angry, everybody else faces the heat. And I was the reason why everything was going wrong. It hit me. What am I doing? What? Everything that was technically possible, I did. And then I didn't know what else to do. I lifted my head. And in that operation theater on the opposite side of the wall, there is a photograph of Swami with an expression which a father or a mother would give when the little boy falls down and is crying because he's hurt. And that sweet expression on the face. Oh, my little boy. You know that funny expression, that lovely expression. It hit me on my face. So you think you're coronary king, my little boy? I woke up. Swami, I'm sorry. You are everything, I'm nothing. You are everything, I'm nothing. I'm really sorry. Then I started chanting Gayatri, this time in earnest. I started chanting the Gayatri Mantra and Swami's Gayatri Mantra in earnest, praying to him. Swami, to teach me a lesson, please don't go so far. There's a patient on the table. As if I can reason with God. You know, even at that level of prayer, the mind would not let go. But he was kind. Another blood gas sample was taken. 5 minutes after I started my prayer, everything was back to normal. In fact, the anesthetist asked the technician, hey, is it from the same patient or have you bought it from some other theater? Because these two samples don't compare. The blood gas sample that was taken 5 minutes ago and the blood gas sample that you brought just now, that is totally crazy and this is absolutely fine. How can it be? Sir, you do one more test. Another sample was sent. It came back. Everything absolutely fine. The surgeon turns back, looks at me and asks, Arvind, what did you do? I said, sir, I didn't do anything. So don't do anything. Let's come off bypass. That was the
That's
thing.
What I had to realize, that I should not do anything.
Exactly. Don't do anything. He will do it through you. This is a life-changing experience for me, Brother Bishop. I am nothing. He is everything. Let go of the desire. It could mean anything.
Yes.
Desire of being known, desire of achievement, desire of power, of pelf, of physical comfort, material comfort, desire in the form of name, fame. Why? When you are His, He will ensure what has to come to you. You may not be known the way you want to be known, but He will ensure that His work gets done through you. The moment you accept that, as He says, nothing will affect you. You may not be known as a great public speaker or an author or a literature or an orator or an actor or a politician, dramatist. Choose any walk of life. The desire to be known is in itself our failure. The desire, Swami, make me a better instrument. That is a correct desire. Make me a better person. Make me a worthy instrument. Tighten me wherever you want. You want to chisel a little more? Go ahead. But that faith, when you have in the Lord, that whatever He is doing is the right thing for you, that is when neither will affect you.
Absolutely. Desire only for spiritual relationship.
Exactly.
Desire for anything that will only take you closer to Him.
Absolutely.
Yes. Then Swami says you won't become the target of doubts and difficulties.
There you go. Now I'm totally comfortable. Because if I'm in trouble, yes, I may have screwed up something, that's why I'm in trouble. If I'm perfectly fine, it's again up to me. Swami says, you let go, I'll take over. As long as you hang on, I'll wait for you. That's the concept of Gajendra Moksham, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think, yeah, Gajendra Moksham's story is again a very, very powerful reminder.
Yes.
Wow.
As long as you are in the physical realm, I'll wait for you. The moment you let go and look up to me and says,
yes,
you know, Dad, hold my hand, the Father will just come down and pull us up.
Yes.
He'll do it for us.
Sudarshana will come back.
So that was Brother Y. Arvind. And the story actually continues. We will listen to a very beautiful epilogue of this story. How Bhagwan responded physically to what he went through in the operation theater later in the day in Trayi, Vrindavan. That's a very, very interesting episode, and I want to keep that for the coming session of Vahini Satsang, because there are very, very powerful lessons there. And we will continue this discussion wherein Arvind is going to share some more thoughts on this aspect of how to make faith paramount. And the interesting thing that Swami is telling here, how only when you relinquish those desires and aspire only for the atmic connection, you will not be put into hurts and insults. How to practice this? In fact, Brother Venkat Reddy also has shared certain tips about how to live this life, how to have this kind of a faith, what kind of an attitude will help us to walk on this path of living with faith every moment of our lives and not being affected by the ups and downs. In fact, Swami says, believe in yourself first. When you have complete faith in these two, that is not placing faith in others and having complete faith in yourself, there is no need for the very thought of good and bad to come to you. The good and bad will not touch you. And that's what Arvind explained, that if you know that you are the coronary king. There's nothing wrong to know that you are the coronary king. But all you have to know with certainty that you are the coronary king because he is holding your hands when you are operating. That should be very clear. We need to have that self-belief. You cannot say, no, I cannot do this. No, I can do it. I can definitely do it. And I will be the best at it because I know someone else is there behind me. The force behind me is much stronger than what the little self that I am. And that is the reason why I can, I will, everything as per His will. So we'll move on and discuss more about this in the coming episode of Vahini Satsang. But meanwhile, wherever you are, if you are listening to this, please feel free to share your thoughts. As I said, this is going to be a participatory satsang. We are not having 2-3 brothers from the Radio Site team sitting in the studio and discussion. We want you to join in this session. Please share, what does faith mean to you? How can we walk on this path of faith every single day of our lives? And how to ensure that we don't go through ups and downs of life once we have that faith, based on what you've heard today and what you have experienced in your own life? There are all so many moments that all of us have gone through when we had developed that faith in the divine. And we have our own ways of ensuring that we don't lose that faith, even though we go through all those roller coaster ride in our spiritual journey. So please send us your reflections, your insights, your stories of what does faith mean to you, and how can we always be in constant faith as we go through the vicissitudes of life. Send your responses. You can record and send, just like Brother Venkat has done. Ensure that you do it in a noise-free room and the quality is good. You can send it to a WhatsApp number, 9393258258. Please do share your feedback to what you feel about this program by sending your messages to our WhatsApp number, 9393258258. And if you record, I will be really waiting to hear you join in this Vahini Satsang. You can record and send them to this WhatsApp number, or you can send them to my personal email ID also, bishu@radiosai.org, bishu@radiosai.org. Please ensure that we don't miss out this chance of diving deep into such precious pearls that Swami has given us. Let us take these pearls and make our lives beautiful. So let this become an e-satsang. Let this become a satsang where all of us join in to make our lives joyful, beautiful, and blissful. Thank you so much. And I look forward to sharing with you and walking on this path with you the coming week, same time, on Vahini Satsang. Sai Ram.